Ekatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are strapping in for, well, a pretty wild ride through one of the most radical ideas of the 20th century.
Absolutely. We're talking about Roland Barthes's 1967 essay, The Death of the Author.
Right. And that title alone. It sounds dramatic, doesn't it?
It really does. And honestly, the impact was dramatic. For centuries, literary criticism was basically detective work, you know?
Trying to figure out the author's life, their secrets.
Exactly. Their intentions. That was supposed to be the key to unlock the true meaning of a text.
But Barthes just, well, he flipped that whole idea on its head, challenging the entire thing.
He really did. And the core question he tackles, it seems simple at first glance.
Yeah.
Like, when an author writes something, does the meaning just stay fixed, locked in their head?
Or does it kind of take on a life of its own once it's out there?
Precisely. And think about how relevant that is now. We live in this world of constant creation, remixing, digital stuff, fan fiction.
Memes.
Memes, absolutely. Barthes gives us a way to understand why the reader or the user, the person consuming it, is actually the one in the driver's seat now.
So that's our mission today. We're going to unpack this this really radical idea.
Yeah.
The author has to metaphorically die.
So the reader can be born. The reader becomes the main creator of meaning.
Okay, let's start with the man himself. Who was Roland Barthes?
Roland Barthes, he lived from 1915 to 1980, was a huge figure in French intellectual life, like literary theorist, philosopher, semiotician.
Right. He wasn't just like looking at culture. He was taking it apart piece by piece.
Definitely. He'd already made a name for himself with mythologies.
Oh, yeah. That's the book where he decodes hidden meanings in everyday things, right? Like wrestling or ads.
Exactly. He showed how they're not just things, they're cultural myths. So his expertise wasn't really in traditional literary history.
It was more about language itself.
Yes, exactly. He was deep into semiotics, the study of signs and symbols, how meaning gets made. And crucially, he was right at this intellectual crossroads.
Tell us about that. What crossroads? Because that feels important for this essay.
Okay, so he started out linked with structuralism. That's the school of thought looking for, like the fixed underlying rules of everything, the grammar of culture, almost.
Okay.
But then he became a key figure moving beyond that into post-structuralism, which basically said, hang on, maybe there aren't any fixed rules.
Meaning is more slippery, unstable.
Exactly. Huh. Constantly shifting. And the death of the author is really his big pivot moment. It's him challenging those fixed structures head on.
So he wasn't digging for facts about Balzac's life, for example.
Right.
He was looking at the machinery of language itself.
Right. And the act of reading. That gave him this unique angle to question centuries of tradition based on how language actually works.
Which can sometimes go way beyond what the person writing intended it to mean.
Precisely. Language has its own logic.
Okay, let's get into the essay itself. The Death of the Author. It's short, you said.
Yeah, short, punchy, almost like a manifesto. It's designed to just completely dismantle this idea of the author with a capital A.
The author is the single source, the guarantor of meaning.
Right. Barthes says that whole approach, you know, analyzing a text by looking at the author's life, their biography, their psychology, it's actually limiting.
How so?
Well, think about it. If you reduce a complex work, say Kafka, to just, oh, he felt alienated because of his dad, you kind of stop looking deeper, don't you?
Yeah, you close off other possibilities.
Exactly. You narrow it down to this one, fixed biographical explanation. Barthes says meaning isn't some treasure buried by an author god.
So what's his alternative?
He pictures the text differently, not as a single invention, but as a multidimensional space.
Okay.
Or even better, a tissue of quotations. Like it's woven together from all these different cultural threads, codes, and sources that already exist.
So the writer isn't this genius creator pulling things out of thin air.
No. In this view, the writer is more like a scripter, someone who compiles, arranges, curates things that are already out there in the culture.
Right. Like mixing existing tracks.
That's a great analogy. And this leads to the crucial point. Meaning isn't found at the origin with the author.
But at the destination, with the reader.
Yes. The whole essay is about liberating the text from the author's supposed control and liberating the reader from having to find that one correct meaning.
Okay, that's the big idea. Let's break down how he actually argues for this.
Yeah.
How does he dismantle the author's authority? He starts with the writing itself, right?
Yeah, he tries to show how the author's voice kind of dissolves inside the text. He uses this example from Balzac's story, Sarrasine.
Ah, yes, the castrato character.
Right. There's this description early on, and it's really ambiguous about who the character is. The language used sounds like it could be universal wisdom about women.
But the context keeps shifting.
Exactly. And Barthes asks, okay, who is actually speaking here? Is it the narrator? Is it Balzac, the guy reflecting his own 19th century biases?
Or is it just language doing its thing?
Precisely. He argues you can't actually pin it down to one single source. And that ambiguity proves his point.
Which is?
That the moment writing starts, it detaches. It becomes impersonal. Writing, he says, is the destruction of every voice, of every point of origin. The writer enters their own death, metaphorically speaking.
Whoa. Okay, so the act of writing itself erases the author as the single controlling voice.
Yeah.
But hang on. Surely we can tell the difference between, like, Hemingway and a first-year student. Mm-hmm. Doesn't the author's skill or style still matter?
Ah, that's the natural pushback, isn't it? If the author vanishes in the writing, why did we ever put them on such a pedestal? Why this author god?
Good question.
And Barthes has an answer. He says the author god is actually a pretty modern invention. It's a construct.
A construct? How so? Tied to history.
Yeah, very much tied to history and ideology. He traces its rise. It really takes off around the end of the Middle Ages, gains steam with the Enlightenment focus on the individual.
And capitalism. You mentioned that earlier.
Critically, yes. Capitalist ideology values individualism, private property, ownership.
And that extends to ideas like, this story is mine.
Exactly. The author's name becomes like a brand. It guarantees value, helps commodify the work. Think about copyright, intellectual property. It's all tied up in this idea of the individual creator owner.
That makes sense. He contrasts this with older traditions.
Right. Think about, say, oral storytelling, epic poems passed down, maybe a shaman reciting a ritual story. The focus there wasn't on the unique genius of the teller.
It was more about the story itself, the performance.
Exactly. The community story, the tradition. So the implication is huge.
Yeah.
The author isn't some timeless truth. It's an ideological construct linked to specific historical and economic conditions.
Okay, so the author is a historical construct. That clears the way for his alternative, the scriptor.
Yes. Yeah. And he makes a key distinction here. The traditional author exists before the book, right? They have thoughts, feelings, intentions, and they pour them into the work. But the modern scriptor, Barthes says, is born simultaneously with the text. They don't have a past that dictates the text's meaning. Their only reality is the act of writing itself.
So they're more like a channel.
Mm-hmm.
An agent.
Yeah, an agent. A tool tracing patterns of signs, pulling from this vast dictionary of culture that already exists.
Which connects back to that tissue of quotations idea. The writer is DJ, remixing cultural tracks.
Exactly. Nothing is purely original. We're all using language, symbols, stories that have come before. The scriptor's skill is in the combination, the remix.
Okay, so if the author is just a scriptor remixing culture, and the text is this tissue of quotes, what happens when we read it? This must be where the reader comes in.
This is the payoff. If you keep trying to impose an author to find the author's single meaning,
you limit the text.
You lock it down. Barthes actually calls critics who hunt for the author's intention counter-revolutionary. They're trying to stop the free play of meaning, the text's potential.
Wow, strong words.
Very. And this leads him to his most famous line, the real punchline of the essay.
The birth of the reader must be at the cost of the death of the author.
That's the one. It's a necessary transfer of power. A liberation.
Liberation of the text from its origin.
And liberation for the reader. The reader becomes the active one. The place where all those cultural quotations land and get synthesized. The meaning, the unity of the text, isn't in its past, the author, but in its destination, you, the reader.
Okay, that's a powerful shift. Let's talk about what that means practically. What are the big themes here? You mentioned democratization.
Yes. Theme one, the democratization of meaning. Think about traditional criticism. You needed special knowledge, right? Read the author's letters, know their biography.
It created experts, a hierarchy.
Totally. Barthes just levels that field. By saying meaning happens in the reader, he empowers everyone.
So my personal reaction, what a poem makes me feel or think, is just as valid as some professor's analysis.
Absolutely. Your interpretive work, your connection, is legitimate. It validates your experience as a reader.
Okay, what's the second theme?
That connects to the tissue of quotations, idea, cultural intertextuality. Everything is connected.
Right. No text exists in a vacuum. It's always borrowing, referencing, responding to the culture around it.
Exactly. It pushes back against that romantic idea of the lone genius creating something utterly new. It makes us see culture as more of a huge, ongoing conversation.
We're all drawing from the same well, in a way.
Pretty much. And the third theme flows from this, the active reader.
Reading isn't just passive decoding.
No, it's productive, it's creative. You're not just receiving a message, you're actively making meaning as you read, bringing your own experiences and understanding to it.
That feels really freeing, like taking the pressure off to find the right answer.
It absolutely is. It frees you from that anxiety. Your interpretation is the work.
The essay is full of memorable lines, isn't it? Let's highlight a few key quotes. We already hit the big one.
The birth of the reader must be at the cost of the death of the author. That's the core statement of power transfer. Reader takes control.
Then there's the definition of the text itself.
A text is a tissue of quotations drawn from the innumerable centers of culture. That immediately frames the text as this interwoven thing made of existing cultural bits.
Defines the scriptor as a remixer.
Right. And maybe one more about what happens when you do remove the author.
Which one is that?
Once the author is removed, the claim to decipher a text becomes quite futile.
Futile? So you can't figure it out anymore.
Well, decipher implies finding a single hidden code. He's saying, forget finding the meaning. The game changes. Interpretation becomes less about discovery and more about production.
Creating meaning, not finding it. Embracing that there isn't just one answer.
Exactly. Interpretive multiplicity.
Okay, this feels quite abstract, but you mentioned earlier how relevant it is today. How can listeners apply this?
Oh, hugely relevant. Think about education first.
Okay.
This encourages teachers and students to explore multiple interpretations of a text. The focus shifts from what did the author mean to what meanings can we make from this? What does this text do?
So it's about the reader's work, their thinking process.
Precisely. And then, as we touched on, digital culture, remix culture.
Memes, fanfic.
Perfect examples. Texts completely detached from an author, constantly being reinterpreted, remixed, rewritten by users. Barth has basically predicted the internet's logic.
That's amazing. Any other areas?
Definitely critical thinking, especially with media and politics. Instead of getting bogged down in, what did that politician really intend to say? Use Barthes's lens, ask, okay, forget intent. What does this language actually do?
Like, what cultural codes is it activating? What effect is it designed to have on the audience?
Exactly. It shifts focus from the speaker's sincerity, which you can never really know, to the function of the language, how it works ideologically. That's much more concrete and useful for analysis.
So wrapping up, what's the final takeaway for you? What really stands out?
For me, it's the sheer power of democratization in this idea. It insists that meaning isn't some fixed thing handed down from the past or from an authority figure.
It's made now, in the present.
Yes, by you, the reader. It turns you from just a passive consumer into an active co-creator of culture. That feels incredibly empowering. You hold the pen now, so to speak.
Yeah, I agree. What strikes me is how fundamental this shift is. It's not just about literature, is it? It challenges how we think about authority and meaning everywhere.
Definitely.
It encourages us to question any single official interpretation of anything, really, and to be okay with complexity, with multiple meanings.
Yeah.
To embrace that productive uncertainty.
Well said. It's a challenging idea, but a deeply liberating one, too.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.